This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Today, we are talking about how childcare facilities and the families that depend on them have been impacted by the pandemic. We'll find out what extra precautions childcare providers have been taking and answer questions that parents may have as they weigh whether or not to keep their kids home. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we will do our best to get it into the conversation today. Again, that's 866-476-3881. Joining me on the phone is the director of Grand Tots Child Care Center in Cedar Lake, Indiana, Cheryl Reynolds. Cheryl, great to have you with us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So if we rewind just a few months back and look at when we first started grappling with the pandemic, can you tell us about what was happening at Grand Tots during that time?
Yes, Grand Tots is a not-for-profit, and we are a child daycare center here located in Cedar Lake, and we also provide the before and after school program for the Hanover School System. And what we experienced early in March was the closure of our local school district, and we had several different things we had to adapt to, uncertainties of the school's closures. We had to continue providing services for working families that were in other facilities that were coming to ours. So we had several different challenges early on. And then as the governor went on March 23rd, he announced that there was a turn, created a whole new amount of challenges for us. It was for us how to protect the health and safety of our students, our staff, how we were going to alter our drop-off and our pickup procedures, our decrease and increase of traffic through our building. So we had many challenges along the way. And as we were experiencing them, we were very fortunate to have our local and state officials' guidance through all of this. It wasn't just one challenge. It was several, between financial constraints. Obviously, our population of our enrollment decreased dramatically. We also were experiencing shortages in our necessary supplies, basic food supplies, cleaning products, PPEs. So there were several different aspects of our challenges and the scarcity of the products, and it just made it very, very difficult and very challenging in the beginning.
Were you concerned about whether you'd be able to keep the doors open if the enrollment numbers stayed down?
Yeah. Yes, most definitely. We were we went from having approximately 200 children a day through all of our four sites down to having 5 to 12, employing 22 staff members. We were looking at payroll. We were looking at operational expense, rent, utilities, et cetera. So we were very fortunate where the state did step up very quickly because they did put us as an essential service. And they helped us, and they wanted us to stay open. So what they did was they provided a temporary assistant grant for the daycare centers that would remain open and to help all the other ones that unfortunately had to close, but it still guided them and helped them along the way. This enabled us to maintain our staff, to get the products that we needed, because as we know, the demands, it increased the prices. So we were able to stay going and keep going through the initial phase of this health crisis. So that was, we were very, very fortunate in obtaining funding early on to help us maintain.
Well, and you were able to secure a $30,000 grant from the Comeback Stronger Fund, supported by Lilly Endowment.
Yes, sir.
And that was meant to help support safety-related expenses and challenges that all child care centers are looking at right now. Was that what has that money allowed you to do?
The money allowed us to offset new expenses that incurred. For instance, our safety operation, we were able to buy additional PPEs. We were able to buy thermometers. This was something that was so scarce that it was very difficult to obtain in the early days, where you're doing no touch. And that enabled us now to get the PPE that we needed to make sure that we can move forward in a safe way and eliminate all risks that we have for the children, for the staff, for the parents coming in. It allowed me to buy face masks, face shields, gloves. It allowed me to buy extra equipment so that we can do the proper spacing, the social distancing that is required through the state and its guidance. We were able to buy cubbies and extra chairs, add 10 additional seats in our facilities. We were able to obtain additional staff that has to do temperature checks now when the children come in. We were able to buy all the equipment that we needed. For instance, we are located in a former Holy Name school building, old Catholic school building. And we have a gymnasium. Our hallways are large. Our classrooms are large. So we're able to social distance very well through just individual classrooms. However, our common spaces, such as our gymnasium, which the children use often, it was very difficult for us to keep cleaning in between the children usages. So that allowed us to buy a floor scrubber because, as we know, there's 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds are going to be on the ground. They're going to be rolling around. So we have to make sure that their safety and their health is the utmost importance. So that allowed us to buy a floor scrubber just so that we can do that quickly, 10, 15 minutes in between sessions, to make sure that that safe, that space is safe for the children.
Is it? It sounds like it might be fair to say that even though you're caring for fewer children right now, in a lot of ways, your staff is doing more work.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Our cleaning procedures have increased immensely. They're having to go through, imagine a 3-year-old playing with the food in the classroom. They're having to go through after their child plays with it. They're having to sanitize it, clean it, and get it ready and make sure that there's that's all clean for the next child that wants to use it. So they're constantly going and, you know, wiping the kids down, making sure, taking to the bathroom where they have to sanitize their tables, their chairs, often, a lot more often than what we used to make sure that they stay safe. And that is our main goal, and I think in any child care center, is to make sure that their health and safety is number one priority. And this is what this grant has allowed us to do.
And when we talk about the safety guidance that's been offered to the public, things like social distancing, hygiene changes, and wearing masks, I mean, I have to imagine that those are challenging things to accomplish in a daycare center with young children. I mean, do kids wear masks at the center?
Yes, they do. We do encourage them to wear them, but as you know, they do come off and on a lot. But we do. Grand Tops, you know, our top priority is ensuring the health and safety of the students and the families and the children here. Difficult is trying to eliminate all risk. We have focused on eliminating the highest risk factors as possible through our PPEs, our face shields, our gloves. As we know, kids are going to grab their mask. They're going to take it off. So if the child does that, we try to encourage them to put it back on, which they don't want to. So we're really watching on how we do it. Everything is changing. For instance, Lake County, Indiana, which we are located in, just now, as of yesterday, put down a new guidance. So we have to make sure that we are following all the guidances. So now we have the CDC, the Indiana State Board of Health, as well as the Lake County Health Department. So we're trying our best to make sure that we are hitting all aspects for the safety of the children.
Cheryl, I have a 3-year-old. Every new thing comes with a question. With this transition, are you fielding a lot of new questions from the kids?
You know what? The children are pretty resilient. They don't understand exactly what's going on. I think my school-age children are the ones that are really asking more questions. The little guys are kind of just going with the flow. They don't really understand it. Some of them are absolutely just not going to wear a mask, or they're not going to want to wash their hands. But then we have our ways of kind of working around that and, you know, getting that fun aspect of things. Bubbles are great. You know, the children, I believe the older ones are the ones asking a lot of questions. They are the ones that are uncertain right now because of the pending school year. So that's where we're kind of finding a lot of questions being asked. 3-year-olds, they ask, but that quick answer kind of appeases them. We have to do it to make sure we stay healthy. Oh, okay. And, you know, so but the schoolers, they want a little bit more information. They're really looking for the guidance right now.
What kind of feedback or questions are you hearing from parents right now?
The parents are good. We've been here since the beginning. We were the only daycare center in Cedar Lake that stayed open through the entirety of this. And the parents, they trust us. They know. They see what we're doing. We had to change our drop-off procedures. And as we did, you know, the parents see us for taking temperatures when the children walk in. The parents are only allowed to go so deep into the building because we want to ensure that we keep everything as sanitized as possible. You know, less germs, better for all. And they know what we're doing, and we speak often with them. Then I have not had one negative feedback on anything. The parents, like I said, are very understanding. They realize and they really appreciate that we're taking this much effort and putting in the effort to keep their child safe.
Have your enrollment numbers gone back up as the state's opened up?
In the summertime, we run more of a camp, so our numbers are lower. However, you know, we went from having over 100 children at our main site a day down to 40. Mm. So currently we're at 40. And so our enrollment is low right now, but we have our new school year that will be starting in August. So at this point in time, I'm completely full. The children have enrolled, and I have not got any parents that have dropped out currently.
Do you have concerns that there might be families who would like to send their kids back but have maybe lost a job or are dealing with circumstances that are preventing them from doing so?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do see that happening. And we're very fortunate in the state of Indiana where there are programs that do help with that. For instance, we have the program On My Way to Pre-K, our CCDF voucher provider program. So these will help the families that are economically depressed at this point in time, and they do help them obtain, for instance, On My Way Pre-K program, the grants award the four-year-olds that of low-income families so that they can access high-quality pre-K programs. So they do help the parents with the children that are going into kindergarten next year. The voucher program through the Child Development Fund is a federal program, and it also helps low-income families and families to obtain child care so they can work, attend school, and continue their education. So there are programs out there right now that are available to the public, and it's my job as Grand Tots to get that out to the public as much as possible so that they know. And when a family comes in and they are in need of assistance, I guide them to the proper agencies that can help them.
We've been talking with Cheryl Reynolds, the director of Grand Tots Daycare in Cedar Lake, Indiana. Cheryl, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate everything that you do. And then thank you for inviting me to be on today's segment of Call-In.
Thank you. And when we come back, we'll have a panel of guests to talk more about how child care in Indiana has been affected by the pandemic. If you have questions, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. We are back in 90 seconds. I'm Matt Pelser. This is All In.
All In. I'm Matt Pelser. What happened? Well, we hit some major technical snags ahead of this live segment. We do appreciate your patience as we work those out. This was bound to happen, of course, since we've been doing the show from our homes since, the beginning of April, even parts of March. But we're going to try our best today. Today, we're talking about how child care facilities across the state have been impacted by the pandemic and, of course, the implications that has for the Hoosier families that utilize those child care services. And we would love your questions and comments on the topic. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. 866-476-3881. We're joined now by four guests. Maureen Weber is president and CEO of Early Learning Indiana. Maureen, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Matt.
Molly Smith is Program Director of Child Care Answers. Hi, Molly.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Nicole Norvell is Director of the Family and Social Services Administration Office of Early Childhood and Out-of-School Learning. Nicole, welcome.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
And Carrie Wardinger is Elementary School Principal within the Mississinewa Community School Corporation. Carrie, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Maureen, in the last segment, we heard, of course, from Cheryl Reynolds, the director of a daycare center, all about those changes that have been made within her facility. How does that story compare to what you've heard from care providers across the state?
very comparable from what we've heard from other providers and what we ourselves have experienced. The organization I work for runs 9 early learning centers during usual times, and over the last many months, we've had 8 of those open. One is located within a school, and it's very, very consistent with the story that you heard there. We've made changes to all aspects of our operations, as have many providers, and continue to work to meet the very changing needs of families at this dynamic time.
Do we know how many of Indiana's child care providers have had to close their doors during the pandemic?
You know, I think Nicole will have the exact numbers for us. I know at the height of the pandemic, several thousand closed their doors at least temporarily, and I think at least several hundred remain closed at this time. Nicole might have more specifics.
Yeah, Nicole, do you have anything?
Yeah, sure. So at the height of the pandemic, which for us in this topic was about April, we had 2015 programs close, and that certainly was at that time about half of our child care capacity. As we sit this week, we still have around 700 programs that are closed that certainly have made tremendous gains in terms of getting programs back open.
And Maureen, financial support was critical to the changes that the facility who we talked about in the first segment made. Grand Tots, of course, they were able to implement this financial support, like the creation of the Comeback Stronger Fund, which they utilized. Can you talk about who's been eligible for that?
Sure. I'm delighted to. So we have been at Early Learning Indiana so pleased to be able to work with the generous support of the Lilly Endowment to launch the Comeback Stronger Fund, which was really designed to help protect those high-quality seats that exist in communities all throughout Indiana. And so we have in this state a system of PASDA quality as our rating system for child care providers. So anybody that is currently a high quality or provider or on their way to becoming one, who also served a high percentage of low-income families, was eligible to apply. To date, we have spent almost $11 million out of the $15 million fund and made 775 awards statewide. So we're thrilled to be able to help providers in that way.
Nicole, can you give us a sense for how many of Indiana's child care centers were in need of support at the outset of the pandemic and maybe still are?
Yeah, certainly. So at the outset of the pandemic, I think we had the vast majority of our not just child care centers, but our family child care homes, our child care ministries, as well as our exempt providers who were in need of support, mostly because their enrollment were down so dramatically. And then those who were remaining open certainly had a lot of additional expenses. And so I think you heard Cheryl mention, grant funding that was available through our office, through the CARES funding that we received from the federal government. And we've had, just an overwhelming response in terms of need from all types of child cares over the last 18 weeks, who really needed support anywhere from, $500 all the way up to, $50,000 looking for support, depending on the size of their child care, to replace things like, lost revenue, to help with additional cleaning supplies, to help just support their overall operational costs.
This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser, and we are currently experiencing some technical problems with our connection to our flagship station, which is why you're hearing us over the phone right now. And today we are talking about child care in Indiana. And we have on the phone Nicole Norville, Director of the Family and Social Services Administration Office of Early Childhood and Out-of-School Learning. Nicole, has the Family and Social Services Administration offered grants to help child care? Have they offered grants to help providers as well?
Yes, we have. So we received funding through the federal government through the CARES Act, and we stood up fairly quickly the opportunity for child care providers to ask for support in that. So we've done that now 9 rounds, so over the course of 18 weeks. And we've spent a little over $60 million providing that support to child cares across the state. And again, that really was to help support them in terms of, the lost revenue because of that decreased enrollment, And then to be able to help them open back up. So for those that closed and needed to open back up because we were going back to work, we wanted to be sure that we were helping them think about all of those things, including staff and PPE and all of the things that they needed to be able to reopen their doors.
I send my child to a provider who operates out of her home, or rather I sent, past tense. He has not been there since March. So how are these smaller providers impacted differently than the bigger care centers, would you say?
Certainly, I think it is different. You know, I think their revenue tends to be a little bit different. But I think the really great thing about the grant has been that regardless of the size of the provider, they could apply for them. And we have seen so many childcare home operators take advantage of these grant opportunities, not through just our office, but also through what Maureen spoke about, and also through some of the federal opportunities like the Paycheck Protection Program. And I think all of those things have been helpful. You know, childcare home providers often have expenses that are different than what a childcare center or ministry has, and I think those things have become more prevalent for them. But we've also seen very interesting trends in that some families, as they are going back to work, have been a little hesitant about larger settings like childcare centers and have become a little more comfortable in smaller settings like childcare homes. And so, you know, we have tried to encourage families to think about the setting that they are most comfortable in, because we want them to go back to work, but we also know that that needs to be an individual family choice. And so, you know, while certainly family childcare has been significantly impacted, we also are seeing some very interesting trends in the choices that families are making as they go back to work.
Today we're talking about how child care facilities across the state have been impacted by the pandemic, and we are having some technical issues with our connection to our flagship station, WFYI, in Indianapolis, which is why you're hearing me over the phone right now. And we are on the phone with Molly Smith, Program Director of Child Care Answers. Molly, can you tell us a little bit about the work that you do there?
Sure. At Child Care Answers, we work with families who are in need of looking for child care. It's our job to share with them the importance of quality child care and how to find it. Obviously, there are many, many opportunities and options for them, so we want to make sure that we fit the needs of their family specifically, but then also give them a very broad range of opportunities for them to explore and experience.
So how has the work that you do changed since the pandemic hit?
Well, we definitely have a change in what the need is. Obviously, during the pandemic, families were pulling children out of child care, keeping them at home. But we also had essential workers who needed child care. So if we had a program closed, then the family was now looking for a new place for their children. Some of the providers were not taking new children, so it was a difficult challenge for our family engagement specialists to find the right set up for care. So that obviously has changed things, but then also the needs of the families as potential job loss, loss of income, just a decline in income, those sort of things definitely affect where they can take their children and those expenses. And so it's also our job then to help them navigate the system, just like as mentioned earlier, with the different programs that are available for families, such as On My Way Pre-K and our voucher system program.
What are parents asking or saying? Common questions or concerns?
What do I do? How do I know that they're taking care of my children? How do I know that they're following all of the recommended guidance from the CDC? They want to make sure that their children are safe and healthy, and obviously we want to support that. So there are a lot of different specifics that as a whole system that we are working to make sure that they're asking those right questions, and also then making sure that they're comfortable with those decisions. Again, it is up to the family to make that right choice for them and their children, but we also want them to know that there are things put into place specifically for their children, such as, why am I not allowed into the program as I'm dropping off my child? Well, that is for a health and safety measure, and this is the reason why. So really making sure that we're empathetic to their concerns, but then also help them understand the reasoning behind why they're doing that, and then also some more specific questions to ask if they're not sure.
And as schools decide how they're going to proceed with the fall semester, I mean, how much of an impact do you think that that's going to have on child care providers? Are you going to follow similar guidelines, would you say?
Well, I definitely know that is a big challenge. We have families who are not making the choice about child care because they're waiting on the decisions of the schools. And so I think that there are a lot of pause and wait, pause and wait. And that's very difficult on a family who's trying to get parents back to work. So I know that that is definitely a question. Obviously, the schools are meeting and doing everything they can to make sure that all of those health and safety measures are in place. Obviously, it's on a much larger scale, so that does look different as well. And so that's, again, what Nicole referred to, is that we are seeing family childcare homes as a potential right option for families because it is smaller.
We are talking about how child care facilities across Indiana have been affected by the pandemic today. And, of course, we are having some technical issues, which is why you're hearing me over the phone. Carrie, let's talk with you for a second. So child care is important from a practical standpoint, but there's also this developmental aspect here for early learners in particular. A lot of children under the age of five are getting some early education at their preschools or care providers. So what would that mean for early learners to be without that, would you say?
Well, I can talk from our perspective. What we're trying to do is create access to those activities for children. I know here at Mississinewa, we are a level four NAEPI accredited site, and we have On My Way Pre-K, CCDF, Title I, and cash paying parents. So one of the ways our teachers stepped up to help support our families during this time is that we provided engagement activities. Literacy activities, numeracy activities, but we also made sure that we pulled in those social-emotional activities. We want to make sure that we're helping support our families. Social media has been wonderful as a way to really connect and reach out. We're also using apps like Seesaw that's been great to connect with our families. But I love watching our teachers and our families connect and reach out through social media of how we can provide activities they can do at home, questions they may have. We've been really, really trying to connect and making sure our families have the resources they need within our community.
You're an elementary school principal within the Mississinewa Community School Corporation, and of course, back to school is very, very soon. Can you tell us a little bit about how you're preparing for it?
Sure. So we are reopening on August 5th. We, our plan just went to our school board last night. We are working for our preschool program. We still will be providing the early care for our families, and that we feel is very important that families need it for work, right? So the drop-off, our school starts at 8:45, but families can start dropping off at 7 o'clock. And we are putting in that guide, different health and safety measures, being creative. I think early childhood should be fun, right? We're making positive memories, and I think that's truly important in this pandemic scary time. We want parents to be reassured that we are taking the precautions and following protocols, but also we're going to play. We're going to have fun, and we're going to make sure that, yes, we may do things a little slower because we're going to build in those sanitation breaks that we need to do, right? But we are going to be masters at hand washing here at Ole Miss Preschool. So I think you have to look at the positive side of all things, right? I think anyone that knows me on this panel knows that I'm going to focus on the good and try to transfer that all to my staff and the families. Some of the ways we're doing it to be creative is where our families drop off. They can't come inside the building, but why not make things down the side of your sidewalk that social distancing letters? So for us, we're having painted on our sidewalk, "We are Ole Miss." So our families can stand on a social distance letter as they bring their child into school. So just being creative, that, and it's also going to be fun and welcoming for the children. And I think that's just another unique way to kind of look at this new normal for us right now.
Maureen Weber, how do the challenges around childcare look different in urban versus rural areas?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I think in Indianapolis, we've had the benefit of having some really strong community partners that have come together to sort of meet the immediate need to offer services for emergency personnel when that was required, healthcare workers sort of in the spring, and we anticipate needing to ramp that up in the fall as well. So we're certainly appreciative of the support of the Central Indiana COVID-19 Community Economic Relief Fund through the United Way and some other efforts like that that managed to pull providers together. But I think as school districts in Marion County and the surrounding counties in particular continue to sort of change their plans as they're responding to new information, it feels like every morning it's sort of a new set of facts that we're dealing with as well as we think about how to meet the needs that families have in this urban environment.
Nicole, there's been limited data that seems to cautiously suggest that children under 10 are less likely to contract the virus, and the evidence isn't quite clear as to how much they contribute to spreading the virus. And so there's just an awful lot that we don't know. But how closely is your office keeping an eye on that research as it develops?
We have a really great team of people within the Family and Social Services Administration who is watching that research very carefully. We're very fortunate that our secretary, Dr. Jennifer Sullivan, is a pediatrician, and so she certainly is helping inform all of us about the research and literature there. We, as it relates to childcare, you know, we are keeping close ties on programs that are letting us know about positive cases that are occurring in childcare. But I think the thing that we're most encouraged about is just simply that, you know, within childcare programs, those that are really following all of the recommendations about face coverings, hand washing, social distancing, all of those things, we're seeing that, you know, that programming really can happen successfully, and that children can still have a high quality experience day to day, even with all of the other things occurring in that environment.
There's a lot more to talk about, but we'll keep the conversation going. Of course, after a quick break, we are talking with experts and advocates about how child care across the state has been affected by the pandemic. And, of course, we're dealing with some technical issues. Thank you for bearing with us. I'm Matt Belzer. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Back now to our discussion on child care in Indiana. And, of course, we're having some technical issues today, which is why I sound like I'm on the phone, because I literally am. And we are joined by our four guests, Maureen Weber, President and CEO of Early Learning Indiana, Molly Smith, Program Director of Child Care Answers, Nicole Norville, Director of the Family and Social Services Administration Office of Early Childhood and Out-of-School Learning, and Carrie Wardinger is elementary school principal within the Mississinewa Community School Corporation. As always, we would love your questions and comments for the discussion today. We are on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. 866-476-3881. So, Carrie, heightened attention to social emotional learning is included in the guidance from the state to child care providers. Can you talk about how you're working to create this environment that isn't overwhelming to children and helps them understand exactly what's going on?
Sure. I think there's a lot of little different things that we can put into the school day while they're with us in our child care setting. One of the things that we're doing just to try to help that child build that connection, because we closed in March, so some of our children are returners, but some are brand new, right? So what we're doing here is to help with that connection piece and that separation anxiety when they are coming back to us on August 5th, is we're giving every child a lanyard that has their name, their teacher's name, but also their teacher's picture, because I would love to say that my 3 and 4 year olds are reading, but we're not reading, so we can't read what that says. They may be able to recognize their name, but we want them to know who their person is. So we're having, if we have the picture of their teacher on their lanyard, that'll help with that connection piece. We're also making sure that within this class day that we're having a you know, built-in brain breaks for deep breathing, yoga, just taking that time to connect, making sure that we have safe places in the classroom. We do utilize conscious discipline here, and that is something that we're very, very proud of, and then making sure that we are building in that opportunity for our families. And so we've been posting on social media little tips for social-emotional learning that they can do at home just to help for that piece, because it is going to be a transition. This new normal is different for everyone. So we want to make sure that we're meeting individual needs of students and making sure that social-emotional needs are met as well. And using conscious discipline has been very helpful for our families.
Nicole, I want to make sure that we get to this. So the state's Early Learning Advisory Committee just released a new report that says that Indiana employers are losing $1.8 billion a year due to a lack of stable child care for employees. And this is according to data collected before the pandemic. Can you explain the relationship between child care and Indiana's economic capacity?
Sure. So I think, you know, of course, anytime an employee has to call off work, right, it's expensive for an employer. Anytime an employee ends up having to quit their job and an employer has to hire someone new, it's expensive. And we know that oftentimes
families are put into impossible situations because they don't have adequate access to childcare. We know that for low-income families in particular, they oftentimes don't have access to childcare, especially high-quality childcare, because it is so expensive. And so there is huge economic impact for employers and our community at large when we don't have good access to childcare. There are certainly educational impacts that go on there for children themselves, and is an issue that, you know, firmly we believe that all of us have a part in terms of helping to make work for all families.
We're talking about how the pandemic has impacted childcare in Indiana, and of course we're dealing with some technical issues right now on our connection between us and our flagship station, which is why I'm on the phone right now. So, Nicole, to continue on that, I mean, what are your concerns now that we've added the pandemic to that relationship? I mean, things were already not looking good before, and now we have the global pandemic to deal with.
I think, you know, our challenges are just maybe a little bit different. So I think some of it is certainly we have more unemployment, which makes that a little bit challenging. And we know that it's hard sometimes to find a job if you don't have access to childcare, right? So going to look for employment and then having to figure out what do you do for childcare after you find a job is really difficult. I think the other piece that the pandemic has certainly brought to light is just the instability of our childcare system. We know that a lot of our childcare providers told us as the pandemic was beginning that they couldn't go more than a couple of weeks without some funding support, or they would have to close maybe permanently. And so I think we've got work to do here in Indiana and really all states across the country in terms of how we think about stabilizing our childcare system more than we ever have in terms of the way in which we fund it. We certainly can't fund it on the backs of parents solely. There has to be good partnership from a state, federal, philanthropic, and private pay kind of combination. And again, I think it will take all of us from, you know, local community partnerships all the way from a state and federal level to figure out how we really make the system work for everyone and can be equitable so that it's not just high-income families who can afford childcare, but all families who can have access.
Maureen Weber, the report that we're talking about from the Early Learning Advisory Committee also says that a lot of the individuals working in early care and education programs are also struggling financially, often making less than the average hourly wage of all U.S. occupations. A workforce shortage in early care and education is projected over the next 10 years. How do we address this?
Well, that's exactly right. And this has been a challenge for our industry for a long time. And to be able to attract the caliber of people that we need to be able to meet this really important both community, you know, business and economic and of course, child development need is absolutely critical. I do think one silver lining of the pandemic is that the rise in unemployment in other sectors allows us to get a little bit creative about how we recruit people into this work and hopefully to find some people who are engaged in careers elsewhere and help them understand the value of this work and, you know, entice them to transition their careers into it. So if we're looking for a COVID-19 silver lining, I think that's one potential one for the early learning industry.
Do you think the shortage that is projected is going to be statewide, or are there areas that will be in greater need than others, perhaps?
You know, it's a great question. It's the single most important thing that I hear from providers statewide. We are all struggling to find and maintain a viable workforce. And for better or worse, we know that oftentimes as people become more expert and have sort of increased training, they may very well be on a path that takes them into the K-12 system where they can earn, you know, substantially more. The teacher of an average classroom of four-year-olds earns just about half what a teacher of an average kindergarten class makes. And so there's real career pathway opportunity, unfortunately, out of our industry. And so I think we have some work to do to stem that tide and make sure that it's attractive for people to be, you know, career professionals within early ed.
Molly, this report from the state's Early Learning Advisory Committee also tells us that the annual cost of tuition to send an infant to early care and education is about $7,000 for home-based care and can rise to over $12,000 for center-based care. And we're talking about prices that begin to rival in-state college tuition at this point. So what kinds of questions or concerns do you typically hear from parents who are trying to figure out that cost?
For sure, how do I pay for this? Or what are the other options available? And sometimes it's difficult to answer that question straight out. But I do know that our engagement specialists are very aware of the different opportunities that are out there. There are the opportunities like as On My Way Pre-K and the voucher program, but and also being creative as far as different avenues that community foundations might have available for families. We partnered with the Hendricks County Community Foundation to support families who are in immediate need right now during COVID to keep their lights on and to be able to help support them to continue taking their children to childcare, but then also pay their bills as necessary. And so I think we really are trying our best to make sure that we know everything that is out there and to be able to connect those families to these resources. But I do know that there is a gap right now because of COVID of families who've never been in any sort of system of this nature before. And this is all new to them. They don't know where to go. They don't know where to look. So there's a lot of education going on to make sure that parents are aware of opportunities. And then also how the system works when it comes to knowing is my child in, you know, a high quality program, well, then the cost is higher. And so that is also a struggle. Parents want what is best for their children. And we know that. And they're doing the best they can right now. So it's being able to support them, let them know they're doing a great job. But then we're there to help assist them. And so that's where we will get families who will call us one time to find childcare. And then they continue to call us back to ask us other questions. We provide technical assistance to families, workshops. They will continue to call because they finally found someone who can listen to their need and help them. And so I think overall, it's just really parents are exasperated by all of the things that are happening to them. So if we can help in any way, we want to.
Today, we're talking about how child care has been impacted by the pandemic in Indiana. And we've been talking with Molly Smith, Program Director of Child Care Answers. We also have Maureen Weber, President and CEO of Early Learning Indiana, with us. Nicole Norville is Director of the Family and Social Services Administration Office of Early Childhood and Out-of-School Learning. And Carrie Wardinger is Elementary School Principal within the Mississinewa Community School Corporation. And, of course, we are dealing with some technical issues today, which is why I sound like I'm on the phone, because I am on my phone in my basement. Normally, I connect to our flagship station with a proper microphone, but that wasn't in the cards today. Molly, I'm going to stick with you. So you serve as a resource for families in central Indiana, but is there someone like you that families in every county in Indiana can call for guidance?
For sure. There are five agencies, just four others, just like what Child Care Answers offers across the state. The technical term is Child Care Resource and Referral, shortened to CCRNR. So there are definitely some acronyms out there that can get confusing. But yes, there are four others across the state, and they serve various counties that are in their service delivery area, and they offer the same services. We sometimes cross borders. If I have a family who works in a county such as Marion County but needs child care in Johnson County, then we work together to try to find that family the right care for them. But I think it's definitely something that across the board, we all are trying to do the best we can, share the information we have, and make sure we meet the needs to every family in the state of Indiana.
Carrie, of course, we're talking about this Early Learning Advisory Committee report, and you're a member of the committee that put that report together. So when you look at this year's report, where do you see progress and where do we still need to improve?
Well, I think one of the things that I'm very proud of is just sitting on this committee and being a part of this and seeing it grow and the number of providers that we've seen achieve that level three and level four access. I think that we're doing a great job. I can speak in Grant County. I really have loved watching and seeing our community come together with our coalition to try to help other providers achieve that status. Some of the areas that I do think that we do need to grow is, now granted, this report was before COVID, so we need to remember that. This was April 2019, but two-thirds of the children under the age of six still needed care. That's 330,000 children in the state of Indiana. So that's an area, like, how do we stop and find access to care? I'm telling you, the partners that are on this call right now are phenomenal. They have done an incredible job of providing us providers with opportunities to help get back to work, help us continue that progress. I agree with Maureen that we are finding a lot of family members that are coming to work for us because it's an opportunity to send their child to childcare, but also they are finding employment with us. And I think that is invaluable as well. I do think that there's just some little things that we can work on for sure. But I do think what I'm very proud of our state is that we're having great discussions. A lot of things are moving in the right direction. The summits that we have in the summers have been powerful for businesses. We're talking. That conversation is happening. The conversations that we needed to have about early childhood education, because what we have found, we're essential. We are needed. And I think that our committee is dedicated and we are ready to help support the families of Indiana.
Nicole, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I would imagine that the committee's already started to look at data on how COVID-19 has impacted childcare. What have you found?
So certainly we are looking at that, although what I would say is it's a really fluid situation, and I think our efforts have really been focused on how do we support those childcares that are open today, how do we keep up with the research and the science about how to best guide them on how to keep kids safe and learning. You know, I think the biggest thing that we want to think about as we move forward is looking at where has capacity diminished. You know, I think the really exciting thing about this EWAC report was this was the first time that we ever saw our level 3 and 4 programs and paths to quality surpass those level 1 and 2 programs. And so we don't want to lose that. However, we know we've lost capacity in this state. And so one of the things that we'll need to focus on is where we lost that capacity and how do we build that back up so that families have access to high quality programming moving forward.
And Carrie, I mean, how about a follow-up? Do you think that next year's report could change significantly as a result of the pandemic?
You know, there's a lot of, as Nicole said, this is fluid. There's just a lot of moving parts that we just don't know. There may be some puzzle pieces that creep up that we're like, man, we didn't know that one was missing, right? But what I do think is that the conversations are happening. All providers are taking a pause, and we're thinking, how can we give families access? How can we make sure that we're providing a safe environment for these families. But I do think that you're going to see more collaboration. I think that you're going to see cross conversations of how we can support one another, and you're going to see what Indiana does best, that we come together and we move forward.
Maureen, I mean, as parents navigate going back to work and trying to weigh the best childcare options for their children, in our last minute, what do you want them to know?
Yeah, I think there's a checklist available online that I might direct parents to at brighterfuturesindiana.org/backtowork that will really help them evaluate sort of whether the childcare providers that they're considering have all the right safety and health measures in place. And that website will also help them think about the learning environment that's being created there. And so there are a lot of tools available to families, and we're here ready to help them navigate them.
I want to thank all of our guests for taking the time today and rolling with our technical issues that put us on the phone on the radio today. Of course, we're talking to Maureen Weber, President and CEO of Early Learning Indiana. Thank you so much, Maureen.
Thank you.
Molly Smith is Program Director of Childcare Answers. Thanks for your time, Molly.
Thank you.
Nicole Norville is Director of the Family and Social Services Administration Office of Early Childhood and Out-of-School Learning. Nicole, thank you.
Thanks so much.
Carrie Wardinger is elementary school principal within the Mississinewa Community School Corporation. Carrie, thanks to you.
Thank you for having me.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme. If you would like a podcast of our show or any past show, get it wherever you get podcasts. Tomorrow we'll be joined by Speaker Brian Bosma as he retires. He announced his retirement officially yesterday, which will take effect at the end of this month. We'll spend the whole hour with him. In the meantime, we're on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelzer. Thanks for listening. This is All In.